Welcome back to Hodinkee Radio, recorded live from Lucid's studio in Geneva and proudly sponsored by Lucid Motors, America's most awarded new luxury vehicle in 2023. Join us for a journey into the world of EV and luxury watches, where innovation drives the future.
That was really good, Tony.
Thank you, Ben. We are excited to be in Geneva. Day one of Watches and Wonders is coming to a close. We've posted, what, almost 50 stories on the site
That's
by
right,
now,
Tony.
Danny?
50 stories.
And we've done a few meetings. We've all been in a few different meetings over the course of the day. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the biggest brands in the Swiss watch industry that we're presenting at Watches and Wonders today. Rolex, Patek Philippe, and Tudor. But before we get there, Ben, since they've already heard your voice, why don't I kick it off to you and tell me what the most exciting or the best thing that you saw today was?
So can I answer with the best thing that I didn't see today?
Please.
That would be the yellow gold Le Mans.
Right. So the one story we wrote that was about a watch being discontinued was the Rolex Le Mans in white gold that we published your week on the wrist of just a few weeks ago, your personal watch.
Indeed, yeah.
And tell us about this yellow gold Le Mans now.
So the... I was about to tell a story that I can't talk about, so I should not do that, right? Right. So the Le Mans, somebody was like, hey, is this thing discontinued? Somebody who owns a Le Mans texted me this morning, was like, hey, is this thing discontinued? And I was like, I don't think so. Like, this thing just came out in June. There's no way, right? And so then Malaika went onto the site and Googled the reference number, and it wasn't found. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe their site just isn't working because, like, traffic, blah, blah, blah. And so then I, like, backed out and went onto the web and Googled the reference. And we saw that it wasn't there. So then I pinged a contact within Rolex and said, hey, is it true that the Le Mans is discontinued? And her response was incredibly telling. She said, Ben, the version of the Le Mans that you own in white gold is discontinued. And I was like, what does that mean? Right? Like, what does that mean? And then, of course, some photos leaked onto Instagram that there's a yellow gold version of the Le Mans already with the red 100 on the bezel and the dial. So this watch is off catalog, meaning we couldn't photograph it, nor could we even see it as press.
But we tried.
We did try. Yeah, we're going to try again. Like, let's be clear. We're going to try again. Yellow gold Le Mans. But I think that also makes the white gold Le Mans, I think, the shortest run of any production Rolex in recent history.
Ever.
How are you feeling about your white gold right now?
I think you know the answer. I think a yellow gold black dial Daytona is about as good as it gets. I was telling somebody on the drive over here, so my birth year watch is a yellow gold Daytona with a black dial. So I'm pretty partial to that. But look.
Of course it is.
Yeah. So we didn't see that, but we know it exists somewhere out there, but it will never be online, so I'm told, on the Rolex website. But look, Rolex, of course, new GMT, some cool day dates. The big deep sea, no longer a sea dweller, just the deep sea. That was pretty wild stuff for sure.
About a 320 gram yellow gold dive watch, which we'll get to all of those in a little bit more detail in just a second.
Yeah.
Malaika, best thing you saw today?
Loving this Coke Zero energy.
So many Coke Zeros today.
We are 50 stories deep, 50 Coke Zeros deep.
Yep.
I'm going to say BB58 yellow gold. Wasn't sure I was going to like that green dial. I liked it.
But we like it.
We like it.
You kind of manifested it-ish.
I did. I manifested. I've been manifesting a BB54. Not quite there yet.
Not quite.
But maybe coming soon.
In gold you manifested.
Yeah.
In your predictions.
In my prediction. Yeah.
They gave you just a little more gold.
Can we talk about these things, or are we going to, like, circle back around?
We're circling back. Okay, we're talking about the best thing we saw. Then we're going to get back to all of it. Danny. Best thing you saw today?
Best thing I saw today, Tony. Tony energy. I'm loving Tony energy today.
Tony's energy for this podcast.
best thing I saw today. I'm going to go a little boring here and say the thing that it was unexpectedly the coolest thing I saw today was just the standard Black Bay from Tudor.
The all black.
All black. It's just, it's the one that no one's really looking at today, but it's like kind of Tudor's modern diver now. It's not like as really... No hints of heritage in it anymore. It's just like a solid monochrome black and white dive watch. On the five-link bracelet, it rocks. The usually press watches don't fit my wrist because they're huge, but with the T-fit, the one that we had happened to fit.
Yeah, the five-link fit on my wrist, too.
It was nice. Cool.
Yeah, it's just a pure all-business dive watch.
All business, no play.
Well, listen, we're going to get back to Tudor, but Ben, let's start.
What was your favorite?
Ah, thank you for asking.
Yeah, wait, hold on. Tony, what was your favorite watch today?
Another vote for the 58 for me. The gold black Bay 58. No, the gold.
Yeah, the gold.
Yeah. Okay.
All matte. Thank you. Set and finished. Yeah. No rivets on the bracelet. Cool, clean look. $32,000 is a crazy amount of money for a gold diver from Tudor.
Double click on that.
We're gonna circle back.
But Ben, where do you want to start with Rolex? I think the headline is probably GMT, just because the GMT is what it is. You're wearing one right now.
I'm wearing one. So is Mr. Milton.
Yes, I am.
50% of us are wearing GMTs. The other 50%
wearing Explorers.
Yeah. Mark off camera raised his hand for us as well.
Predictable.
We are alternating. Yeah.
Indeed, to be clear.
Ben, tell us what you think about the GMT, and then I'll get your GMT comrade Danny over there.
Sure.
To chime in.
Great watch. You know, is it the most exciting thing? I think the answer is no. But for somebody that doesn't want a Pepsi or a whatever, I think it's a compelling thing. I happen to like black and gray. I'm a big gray guy. I think you guys know that. Really neat. Guy. I think what is what's neat about this one is that it's available from retail with Jubilee or Oyster. Mm-hmm. And now, I guess effectively for the first time, you can, through your authorized dealer, order the other bracelet. And that's kind of, I wouldn't say it's not being advertised, but it's being publicized, which that has never been the case. If you ever wanted to get an additional bracelet from a Rolex dealer, it was kind of a rigmarole to make happen. And this is like, we were told that. We didn't ask. We were told that in the meeting today. So that's kind of cool. You know, it's a great watch. Is it super exciting? Definitely not. But you know, it'll do exceptionally well, obviously.
How do we feel about GMTs on Jubilees? I'm here for it.
Oh, I love them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I prefer them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're uniformly in agreement on that for sure. I mean, I have the same. I think it's not an exciting release, but it's the kind of watch that belongs in the collection. It's like, you know, it hasn't been there for a while. The Lefty was there. That kind of.
God, I forgot about that.
Took the place.
Oh God, yeah, Lefty
of the black. Right, we don't. And there was no.
Remember
like,
Lefty,
right?
It's still in the catalog.
We also have this now black and gray bezel option. It's just, you know, everyone I think missed that old solid black bezel ceramic GMT, and this kind of brings it back in pure Rolex fashion. Like, it's not the same watch; it's slightly different. I'm still not sure how I feel about black and gray ceramic bezels. I'm working up to it, but
we'll get there.
I'd like to see how the gray ages. Like,
well,
how
it won't. That's the whole thing with Cerachrome.
It doesn't age. Yeah, right. But like, as in not how it ages, like materially.
Understood.
Like, you know, right. Aesthetically. Yeah.
Sure. I think gray is never not in vogue. That's my two.
It's coming from a gray guy.
I'm Mr.
a
gray guy.
Yeah. But here's. I mean, it's just like, it's so funny. Like when the Pepsi came out on the white gold and then on steel, it was like such a big thing. This is the same watch, just with different colors. It's just amazing that like Pepsi or Coke or whatever means so much to some people. And this just like doesn't.
Almost any other brand, if it was just dial changes, we would probably barely talk about it.
Right.
And here it's like some color changes.
But this watch, sorry to talk over you. This watch also had, it has a green GMT hand. Is that right?
Green GMT hand, green GMT master text. Yeah.
Yeah. That, like, I'm here for that.
Yeah.
You know?
Anytime Rolex does green anything, I get a little bit excited, honestly.
Said with enthusiasm. Although I have to say, in that little tour, you know, we had the little historical walk around tour of
the GMT museum.
There's actually a Rolex GMT master exhibit, almost like a miniature museum inside the Rolex booth this year, that basically tracks the lineage of the GMT master, and there's a lot of historically significant pieces in there. And I believe that will be open during public days for anyone who's going in the Rolex booth to go through that. And you guys had a guided tour. I missed that part.
I loved it. I also loved seeing a GMT on the cover of Vogue.
It was incredible.
They didn't quite get the dial there. There was a bit of glare in that photo, but it was kind of cool.
It was amazing.
It was cool. And then my second favorite thing was the 2005... Is it green dial?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I know. I have a thing for 2000s watches. So what does that say about me?
Malik is talking about, like, I think it's the almost the original.
Is it
ceramic
the original?
GMT?
It was
the
original ceramic GMT.
The first ceramic GMT, which is a yellow gold watch with about like the loudest green dial you've ever
seen. Okay, it's not that loud.
It's pretty loud.
Okay, it's not like.
I've called it an afterthought of a dial a bit. Like, it seems like, you know?
I thought it was cool. I would wear.
I would wear too.
Yeah. Okay.
I would wear.
Yeah, don't you talk about green like that to me. One of the coolest things in the exhibit to me was Jack Swigert's GMT 1675 was there, and it says that it was worn during the Apollo 13 mission, which I'm not sure it was public information that Rolex had that watch. At least I didn't know it or had forgotten this. Ben, did you know if this?
I knew the watch existed. Yeah, I did not know that they owned it. That's just a quick footnote on all this, is that everything in that display is owned by Rolex for the first time.
Yeah.
So even last year there were Daytonas, but they made somebody I was speaking to made a point to say that we own all of these watches, which is pretty neat.
For example, it's called the Captain Warren 6542 GMT, and it sold at an auction here in Geneva last May.
Were you in the room for that?
Rolex was in the room bidding. I was in the room not bidding, observing. And now it's clear that, you know, it's on display at the show here. So it's cool to see some of the historical stuff laid out like that. But Ben, enough about the GMT. I mean, I think we've talked about a black and a gray bezel change as much as we can.
Yeah.
I think the funniest, like, laugh out loud moment in the Rolex room was the gold, don't call it a sea dweller, deep sea.
Right.
So it's a 320 gram gold deep sea.
Yeah.
How did it feel on your wrist, Ben?
Big.
Yeah.
Big and heavy.
Yeah.
Titanium case back and titanium helium escape valve, which you just gotta love, like, even in spite of, like, the absurdity of making a solid gold 3,900 meter dive watch, they're still going to use a titanium case back and helium escape valve. Honestly, I thought I could pull it off. You know, I feel like I'm, like, dressed like a yachtsman today. I feel like it kind of worked
was,
for me.
It was the vibe of your outfit for
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Mark Kozlerich, who's behind the camera over there, has made a point a few times that he saw the Berkeley Grand Comp, which is now the most complicated watch ever. And this dive watch weighs about a third of that, which is pretty incredible to give you some scale. Really neat thing. I liked it on Malika. I liked it on all you guys. I mean, it just looks
you
so good.
Pulled it off especially well. There are wrist shots.
I really appreciate
to prove
that.
It. Of course. Of course.
Miss Yellow Gold, what else is there to say about a yellow gold deep sea? I keep wanting to say sea dweller.
I mean, listen.
Don't say sea dweller.
It just kind of reminded me of, like, you know, rappers in the 90s. Like, isn't there a picture of, like, Busta Rhymes or someone with, like, an obnoxiously large watch? Just
surely we can
just
find
meters it. Under the hundreds of meters underwater,
thousands, really.
Thousands.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, are we being real or are we just leaning into the fantasy?
I think we're leaning into the bit.
I don't think Busta Rhymes. I'm not sure he could have. He could have for sure.
Yeah. No, I was. I mean, look, it was a talking point. We like that.
Yeah.
I think, Danny, I mean, you said it, and I'm going to take full credit here, but, like, my dream for Rolex was, like, to kind of do nothing this year. They kind of did nothing.
They basically did nothing.
Right. I mean, in a great way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, some new dials on a day date, which you really liked, actually one that you really liked too.
Yeah.
Le Mans, which is not even in the catalog. This gigantic 300-gram gold dive watch. Like, these are really not commercial.
Yeah, Ben, I agree. It does sort of feel like they released nothing in the weirdest way. Like, every piece this year feels like in another release year there would have been a hero piece supporting them. Like, just a black GMT feels like there should have been the Coke everyone expected,
right?
And there should have been some crazy day date to support all the other day dates. Mm-hmm. There should have been, you know, a new, I don't know, 41 millimeter sea dweller to support a new deep sea. They all feel like second watches to a bigger release in each category, which is a weird thing. And then the other one just doesn't exist, and it exists simultaneously with the Le Mans. So there's nothing, and there's literally
one. Right, and the 1908 and Platinum.
1908 and Platinum, exactly.
Like, nice dial, you know?
For sure.
Well, they released all their heroes last year, basically. I mean, there were, what, five, six,
that's
seven
true.
Heroes
last year was kind of stacked.
I don't know what that was all about. So yeah. I think it's totally fine if they don't have a hero product this year. Do you agree with that or no?
I do, because also some of these watches, like, sometimes when you have, like, hero pieces, the hype is so big that they, for years, become very difficult to find just because of demand. And these feel sort of like mainstays, all of them, that are just sort of like low key and the kind of watches people would, you know, buy and keep and have sort of as like a one.
Yeah, they're not
one watch.
They're not super hypey. No. I mean, yellow gold Le Mans aside,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
They're not super hypey, but I mean, I think the same can be true for Tudor and Patek. Like,
yes.
Maybe this is a palate cleanse, yeah.
I think it is.
I don't want a Rolex that's releasing a Le Mans for 6 months and then discontinuing it. I think that's interesting for some people, present company included, I suppose, in that particular case. But that's not like the Rolex that makes Rolex Rolex, to use the same word three times in a sentence. It's about making, you know, it's about making the best mass-produced watch in all of Switzerland, at least, and a watch that ideally people can get.
Yeah. I mean, look, nothing would make me happier if this time next year I looked over at at least you two, and you were wearing that day date that you love, and you were wearing the day date that
it
you
might
love.
Happen, Ben.
You, I don't, whatever, you know, yeah, you're, you get excited.
We'll have the platinum 1908, Ben. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But again, it's like, I think you made a really good point. Like, these are watches you live with. They're not like, hey, everybody, check out my new, you know, Le Mans or, you know, some crazy hyped up watch. It's just watches you live with. And I think like those are the Rolexes like this that I've had since new in 2015. Yeah. Like, you just live with, they're part of your life. It's not like literally nobody has stopped me to look at this watch.
Right.
You know? And that's like kind of a good feeling.
Also, there was so much precious metal. Like, when I picked up the GMT after handling like some of the other watches, it felt like a titanium watch. Like, even my GMT, it just felt so light in comparison. It was almost, aside from GMT, I think everything was precious.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Danny. That's true.
Yeah.
That's a very insightful point. Who,
this guy.
Look at me. Look at me, guys.
On a roll. Who would have thought, Danny, talking about Rolex?
I'm here. I'm living for it.
We've mentioned a few times now the 1908. So they introduced the sort of dressy 1908 collection last year with four watches total, white, yellow, and then these kind of flat white and black dials. And they've added a platinum watch to it in Rolex fashion. It's got an icy blue dial, but it's got this nice guilloche finish on it. They're calling it a rice grain, I think. And then there's another finish on the outside of it. Ben, 2 years into the 1908 collection, is it doing anything for you?
It is. Look, it's not a watch that's on my list to own anytime soon. But every time I see one, which is not often. In fact, I don't think I've seen one since last, not Basel.
Watches and Wonders.
I'm impressed. The movement is really nice. Big, open, what do you call it? A naked case back?
Nude case back.
Yeah. You know, really big gold rotor. It's nice. It fills out the case. I mean, it's a quality movement for sure.
Yeah, you know, I liked the release last year. It came off not flat, just conservative, I think. The dials were just kind of this matte, essentially, and then it's yellow and white gold. It laid the foundation for what could be an interesting dress watch from Rolex. And I think the way they positioned it in their press release was interesting to me. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was something like the home of celebrating, you know, craftsmanship and traditional watchmaking. So if that's things like guilloche dials, even if it is kind of a, you know, it's not going to be hand guilloche'd, obviously. That's not the scale at which Rolex is producing things. But if it's things like that and maybe calendar complications in the future, it's something that could be really exciting to me.
But I think also, just to be clear, like hand guilloche, like, we're talking about like a rose engine machine or like, what do you mean by hand? Like hand, like with a...
Yeah. With hand turned like engine.
Yeah, like I don't, right? I frankly don't think anybody, with the exception of like Josh Shapiro or like Roger Smith or somebody like that, is even doing that anymore, you know?
I'm going to be controversial.
Please.
Boy, here we go.
I don't really, the guilloche thing, it doesn't...
Just like generally.
It's an old school thing.
It doesn't do it for me.
No, I get that.
The aesthetic of a guilloche dial.
And I also have that thing, is it trypophobia? The little holes.
Tryptophobia.
Yeah, it freaks me out. And you, everybody's always like, oh, guilloche. And I'm like, yeah.
Can you unpack this? Just the aesthetic doesn't work for
I think anything? The aesthetic, it reminds me of like those spiral, like, you know, when you're a kid and you get those weird circular things and you put...
Yeah.
Spirogram. Yeah, that's spiral. What is it? Spirograph. It just, I don't know. I'm like, okay, cool. Not to like shade on the tradition.
No.
Yeah.
Cause so I understand. I don't even know what a spirograph is.
Yeah.
So I don't get that. But okay. I understand, like, from an aesthetic point of view, like, it's pretty fuddy duddy.
It's
sure.
It's pretty grandpa.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's...
Listen, I'm not saying I get it. Yeah. It's just not for me.
Yeah, I get it.
I think what I said about the dials last year, you know, when you get a 39 millimeter dress watch, that's basically all dial. And then there's no texture in the dial like they had last year. It makes it look even bigger and, you know, slightly boring if you're going to, you know, put a negative spin on it.
Right.
I'm glad they did something with the dial. I had hoped for some complications, some calendar cutouts, something like that. But it's something. And I think it's more interesting than last year's release.
I quite like a clean dial. Yeah.
So you disagree with me is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm with Malika on this one, especially for the 1908.
And
I think
the black.
I like the clean.
You like the plain ones better?
Yeah.
I like the black, especially the black one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if you're on the show the rest of the week. Okay, guys. I think that's going to wrap up Rolex for us, and we're going to transition to Tudor after that. But Before we do that, I want to talk about where we are, where we're recording this podcast. We're at Lucid Studio here in Geneva. We are immersed in the essence of luxury with Lucid Motors here. Every journey is an experience of unparalleled comfort and advanced technology. Lucid Motors' commitment to sustainability is not just in its electric innovation, but in every detail of the Lucid Air's design. Experience a new era of luxury travel with Lucid Motors. Learn more at lucidmotors.com. And if you happen to be in Geneva, everyone, stay tuned to the website because we're going to be posting about a community event we're going to be having here on Friday evening. There's going to be space for everyone in the community to come by, meet all of us editors, as well as experience Lucid Motors and their beautiful electric cars. So stay tuned for all of that and more on the website. And thank you again to Lucid for sponsoring the show all week.
Is Ben going to be there?
Ben Clymer?
Yeah.
Are you going to be there?
I think so.
Ben Clymer will be there for those who want to. Danny Milton and Malaika Crawford will also be there for the entirety of the
show. For the entirety of the show.
As well as other editors you may know and love, Mark Kalslerich, James Stacey. For those fans of behind the camera work, Will Holloway will also be there, which I know a lot of folks are looking forward to.
Joe Wyatt will also
be
there.
This is also a chance to shout out. A chance to shout out Joe Wyatt and Jonathan McWhorter, who are on the ones and twos all week doing wonderful work. Thank you to you guys. Speaking of, there's
a wonderful word.
Speaking of total non sequiturs. Speaking of GMTs, though,
yeah.
Speaking guys, of being immersed in the essence of luxury,
sure. GMTs were also the headliners at the Tudor show.
Tudor.
We finally got what a lot of people have been asking for. I think the Tudor Black Bay 58 GMT. Danny, we have to start where we start with any GMT release. I think from Rolex or Tudor. What's the nickname we're giving this watch?
I think it's either the Mr. Pibb or the Dr. Pepper. You know, if we're gonna go sodas here, it's burgundy and black.
What the hell is Mr. Pibb?
It's like the Pepsi to Coca-Cola, you know?
Yeah, I actually really like Mr. Pibb. I did anyway.
Is it?
Yeah, and for all like the Jewish deli folk out there, it's like the Dr. Brown's a little bit. You
okay,
know?
Got
way
it.
Worse though.
Black cherry. Yeah,
significantly worse.
Yeah, for sure. I like speaking of the Black Bay 58 GMT, it's the watch everyone wanted. I think what everyone really wanted was the Pepsi version of this watch, but Rolex and Tudor are never going to give you exactly what you want. They're going to give you this kind of watch.
Until they give you exactly what you want in the Le Mans, I'm just saying.
That's true. Right. Twice.
Right.
And I think this watch is interesting. It's everything Tudor's been doing for basically the last decade plus. It takes a color scheme that we know, burgundy and black, which on the Pepsi version of the Tudor GMT, it's technically burgundy and blue, not red and blue. So here we get a lot of gilt. And we get the matte dial, but what we get that's really cool about it, even though I'm not like thrilled with the color scheme, what I think is very cool about this watch is the fact that it's only a millimeter thicker than the standard Black Bay 58.
Right.
And manages to pack a date complication and a GMT complication into that movement. And I think it's something that needs to be talked about more considering I think it's just been 2 years since the Black Bay Pro was released. And that's a very thick watch at 39 millimeters. So being the same case diameter, but like to the naked eye, effectively the same sort of profile as the Black Bay 58 makes this very cool. Don't quote me on this. And I think James wrote the story, so he would know better than me. But the crown looks redesigned on this watch a little bit too, which I think is something that's happening across the Black Bay line. So overall, I like this watch. I just, I'm going to be one of those guys that's waiting for maybe a different color scheme.
Is it too much gilt for you? Is that basically what
it's
happened?
It's a lot of gilt. It's like, I was never really a huge fan of the burgundy Black Bay to begin with, because like the burgundy and the gilt is just very like red yellowy to me. This is like it's not like a refined way of saying that, but that's just how it feels. Just a lot of like.
It's very sepia toned.
Very sepia toned. And I don't like sepia tone. Mm-hmm. I like, I'm more of like a black and white or full color, So.
It basically wears like a 58 on the wrist, like to be clear. They reworked the way it's structured, the sapphire, the dial, and the movement on the inside to get it down to whatever it is.
We may have a fact check on me. I think I might be wrong about the crown, James.
The crown is correct. It's a new crown. It's a 10th.
All right, two fact checks here. We'll do it live. The crown's redesigned, but also it is just a 10th of a millimeter thicker than the Black Bay 58, which is even better than it being a millimeter thicker.
So that's why it wears like the Black Bay.
Exactly.
The 58, as I said.
But I think the thing about it, which is so interesting to me, is like imagine Rolex added a GMT complication to the Submariner. That's basically what they did, right? It's like I think I understand the critique of the gilt and the colors, but to me, the takeaway is that 39 millimeter GMT, same dimensions, thickness wise, date. It's like on paper, it's an incredible watch.
Yes.
The Black Bay 58 is probably the watch I wear the most. Yep. I wear the watch all the time.
I think me too.
So having that with a GMT and a date is incredible. The fact that that exists alongside currently the Black Bay GMT, right? Or I guess it's just called the GMT.
Black Bay GMT.
Black Bay GMT.
Yep.
So not Black Bay 58 GMT. Right,
right, right, right.
That's the Pepsi one. That's 41 and thicker. It's just like, why... Unless you really love the Pepsi, why would you buy the bigger watch if you're, you know?
It almost seems like it's an aesthetic choice at this point for Tudor.
Yeah.
Not like a technical problem.
But I think, I've said this on another podcast recently. I'm the biggest Tudor fan. Like,
yeah.
Love them, love the people, love everything about them. The line is getting jumbled. There's too many Black Bays.
Too many Black Bays.
It's a lot of BB.
Yeah.
A lot of BB.
We said this on the preview pod. We said it would be a decent year if they didn't add to the Black Bay line, basically, and just kind of cleaned it up and brought everything within line with each other, bracelets, cases, all these types of things. But they gave us more Black Bay, even more Black Bay.
Yeah, I mean, look, the critique levied against our friends at AP is that it's like a monoproduct brand. Yeah. Tudor is a monoproduct brand,
yeah.
Right? I mean, look, you get an AP Royal Oak Chronograph, Retro Calendar, blah, blah, blah. Like, Tudor's the same thing. It's all Black Bay.
It wasn't all Black Bay
except
this year, Ben. What was the other one? The other one?
What was the other one?
What was it called?
The tables have turned. The Clairvoyant? No, the...
Here we go.
I feel redeemed.
Go on.
Claire de Rose.
And Malek, you're writing that up for us, right?
Yeah. Can't wait. Intro coming soon.
can't wait.
But the watches are good. I'm just, you know, it's a weak critique on my part, but it's just like, if they called it something else, I would be more
inclined
to like it.
But that AP parallel, I think, doesn't work because there's something about the DNA of the Royal Oak that is like so like strong.
Now, sure.
I guess because over time,
right.
It's like so imprinted in our...
Right.
Sort of,
well, it's 1972 and not 2012 or whatever the first Black Bay was.
So
yeah.
It's like evolved and evolved and evolved. Yeah. And I don't think that's really, I don't know, that's a weird parallel.
Weird guy.
It's we were saying this on the ride over here, though. It's like I miss the days where Tudor had the Black Bay, but we're still innovating on the fringes, whether it was the North Flag, Heritage Chrono, Advisor.
Pelagos,
like
of course.
Yeah, Pelagos, which is still there, obviously.
Still there.
But then Then you're talking about like just divers. Like if it's not Black Bay,
as
it's
somebody
only divers.
Who really didn't know anything about Tudor until 2 years ago, all I know is like all I think of is Black Bay.
Right,
I do not think of anything else other than the Pelagos because of James Stacey, but that's it.
James Stacey wearing a Pelagos off camera.
Yeah.
Watches and Wonders the last 2 years have been Black Bays.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Royal, some Royal was mixed in there.
Sure. Danny. Whatever.
You give me a Ranger.
I'll give you a Ranger.
Yeah.
That was not a Watches and Wonders release, though, I suppose. Yeah. Malika, our favorite watch, maybe of the entire day, was a Black Bay 58. It was
people
the
with the
yellow
discerning
golden.
Eyes.
Those with discerning taste. What did we think of the Black Bay 58 on the wrist?
Sick.
Honestly loved it. I thought I was going to maybe not love it as much because that green is sort of sometimes unsettling to me. But I think because the bracelet is all gold and it's like not on a strap, the green kind of works. You get enough gold. It's a lot of gold. And it also somehow looks like a Tudor shade of gold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, so to be clear, we're talking
still,
about-
It still has it.
It's still got that little hint of Tudor. It's like a Tudor alloy.
It's because it's so brushed, too.
I think
it's
the whole thing is entirely satin finished.
Yeah.
To be clear, we're talking about the fact that they added a bracelet to the 58, the Black Bay 58 in gold that they released
gold,
3 years ago, maybe, which I went back and read James's hands-on. I think a lot of people were asking, can we get a bracelet on this thing? So I'm glad 3 years later we've got it.
Well, Tudor said yes, Tom.
They did.
Said
yes. I did ask for a BB54 in yellow gold. And I would like that to come true. You know, I think that could be cool.
Yeah. I think that I also love the gold 58. Super cool. I think the pragmatic side of me, if there is one, is the price is really high.
Bit weird. Yeah.
So look, the retail price, I believe, and you can fact check me here in the notes, is $32,000.
Correct.
Price of a gold Submariner is at most 38. I think it might even be less, 37, 36. So a gold Sub, which is the flagship diver, and then a gold Black Bay. It's pretty
Where
weird.
Are you going? Where are you going if you have the choice?
Don't make me answer that question.
It's an interesting, I mean, to put them that close in price is really quite curious. I could see, okay, if the sub is 38, Tudor's 28, right? 10,000, that's a meaningful difference. Yeah. But if you're already spending over 30 on a watch, like what's four
so
more?
So what's the
more?
Brand message here then?
You tell me.
With that price point. Are we like, are we looking to expand into sort of other things?
I think it's maybe a Halo thing where they're not going to sell a ton of these, I wouldn't imagine. You're not going to see a ton of these in the
you're
wild.
You're probably right. Make the money on it.
Yeah. There's a huge margin on it, I would imagine. And it's, hey, we've got a $30,000 watch. And everything else in the catalog doesn't look so insane, I suppose.
No, you're right. I mean, honestly, there's a, it's small, but it exists. There's a group of people, some of which I know, that are kind of anti-Rolex, but love Tudor. Mm-hmm. And some of these guys make some money. And so maybe it's just, as you said, it's a small batch product, a high margin, small batch product. And they'll sell it to the Tudor guys, and that's okay.
Well, and the reality is, I mean, Tudor makes a hell of a product for the money.
No doubt.
With the Meta certification and the manufacturer and the look, like prices are going up when they introduce these things. And I think a $30,000 watch kind of helps reorient the conversation a little bit.
Maybe. I think it's people. Also, I mean, I agree with Ben, and now I'm sort of like playing devil's advocate because I'm thinking about this, but I think every brand wants to create this sort of like stay within the brand universe, brand loyalty situation. So start here, aspire here, go here, go here. So like obviously like in the modern context right now, it feels weird, but who knows where Tudor will be 10, 15 years from now. And so I don't know, just to have that ability and capability to set precedent, to have a yellow gold watch. You never know.
To be clear, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, no, me neither. I mean,
well,
I think
that's
fantastic.
Sort of what I was asking, right? Yeah. Like, what is Tudor saying about its future?
Right. And maybe it's like pretty feeling itself right now.
You know, I will say that what's cool about that gold, and the reason why, I mean, I make jokes about it not being quite the shade of gold I desire, but I think that
it's
brush.
Giving, it's giving bronze.
It's not giving bronze. I will say that, like, that brushed aesthetic, it works for the guy who prefers Tudor, who maybe wants to wear a gold watch and doesn't want to look as flashy, right? Because it's gold without that, like, intense.
For the James Stacey type.
It's James Stacey's gold watch.
It's Jim Stacey gold for sure.
It's a little bit more subdued.
Yeah.
And a footnote, but there's no rivets on the Black Bay 58 bracelet.
Yeah. It's a really good point.
They said it was just a kind of an aesthetic choice.
I don't
but
believe that.
I think some people will be curious to see that.
I think it's a sign of things to come, personally.
You think so?
Yeah.
One more Black Bay release we had, Danny. I think you were the one that wrote this up this morning, was, I think it's just called the Black Bay.
The Black Bay.
And it's basically a monochromatic Black Bay, the most modern looking Black Bay we have now.
The Black Bay is inching closer and closer to being a Submariner. That's what's happening. I mean, Tudor has basically taken what was once this like huge, you know, the big crown aesthetic, now kind of looks like a Submariner crown. The bezel was coin edged. Now it's teethy and looks like a Submariner bezel. The dial was matte. Now it's Sunray. It looks like, you know, almost a gloss Submariner dial.
We're getting
dial.
Close to gloss.
We're almost at the singularity. Like, I don't know what happens when the Black Bay innovates to the point where it is a Submariner.
It becomes one.
Exactly.
And I don't know where we end up. It's the same. It's almost the same conversation as the gold Black Bay 58. Like, at a certain point, it's not big brother, little brother anymore. I don't know where we are. But I do think it's nice to have a Black Bay that doesn't feel like the heritage Black Bay at all.
Yeah.
And especially on the five link bracelet, because you don't have faux rivets, that feels like a modern watch. And that's the first time I've looked at a Black Bay and said that's a modern looking watch.
It kind of feels like, I mean, having worked with Tudor for a long time now, like, it kind of feels like they're growing up, and in the early days they were kind of like bashful, and they're like, whoa, like, we're the little guy over here, like, we would never step on Rolex's toes, because how could we, you know? And now they're like, let's just do what we want,
except for that pink dial social caption the other day where they sort of said, what did it say, we made these pink dials, we know they're not for
that
everyone.
Was crazy. That was did you see that?
It was very like, here's a pink dial, but oops, like, if you don't like it, like, it's fine.
I was reading in the press materials, they were like, we realize this isn't for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, and we're not making that many of them.
Anything else on the Black Bay discussion, guys? Can we leave it there?
Let's leave it.
We're Black Bayed out. Okay. The last appointment that some of us, actually, I think only one of us on the couches here was able to go to today was Paddock.
That's embarrassing.
Ben, it's embarrassing for us three, I suppose. Ben, you started your day off at Paddock.
Yeah.
A number of new releases from them. Yeah. I think the one that you even wrote up for us on the website, which everyone should obviously go read now.
I even wrote a story for
is the Inline Perpetual
5236P, I think.
5236P Salmon Dial.
Yeah.
Tell us about that watch and why you wanted to write it.
I love it.
Nice. All right. Good.
We're done. We're done
now. Yeah.
Wow.
So the inline perpetual calendar is something that, so as you may or may not know, Patek Philippe invented the perpetual calendar wristwatch in 1925. In the early 1970s, they created a inline perpetual calendar pocket watch. Jean-Claude Beaver actually had one in our Talking Watches, I believe. Really neat, really technical, and of course, like, allows you to read the display of a perpetual calendar linearly, which is like, okay, it's Saturday, September 15th, 19, so-and-so. Like, it makes a lot of sense. So it is kind of like, I don't want to say the holy grail, but many people in watchmaking have tried to do linear display of perpetual calendars. Patek did it in 2021 in the same watch, just with a blue dial. But Watches and Wonders 2021 was like peak COVID. Right. It was the fair. I don't even think there was a fair.
It was digital. Yeah.
It was digital. Right. Yeah. So like that watch wasn't shown in person. Yeah. Therefore, I didn't see it in person at Watches and Wonders. Not that I'm important, but like just nobody saw it. It existed in the catalog and like, OK, like it's around, but wasn't really paid attention to. And then this year they brought back the same watch, just new dial, salmon dial, black numerals or not numerals, black baton markers, black hands. And it just like hits every note that a Patek guy like me would like. Platinum case. Technically really innovative, three patents in it. It's got a case that's like a 3448, if you know what that is. Just a killer watch that, like, you know, if I were in the market for a perpetual, this would be right up there.
Can I just say, you went from being speechless to that. That was pretty insane.
Well, you know.
That was like, that was really impressive.
It was all back there. I had to pull it out. So that was really neat. But again, that's not a new watch. It's just a new dial. But like with Patek and like Rolex, it's like, okay, a new dial can mean a lot. And with Patek, it really does. So platinum salmon is big. But there was a lot of other stuff too. But in many ways, Patek was a little bit Rolex this year. And like, okay, there was the world time that we saw that you saw at the Grand Exhibition.
Japan. Yeah, in Tokyo.
Now in white gold for the general catalog.
So this is, let's stop on the world time just for a second. Sure. 5330G.
Right.
Danny, saw the purple dial.
The purple dial
guilloche at the Tokyo Grand Exhibit. They're
dial guilloche. Sorry.
She's literally shuddering.
Two strikes.
Yeah. I forget how limited that watch was, but it was like
300. Okay. 300.
Yeah, and only for Japan.
Yeah, only for Japan. And they were all spoken for by the time I had seen them.
Right.
Yeah.
So now it's in the current catalog. And it's got kind of this blue opaline gray dial, I think they call it. It's got this kind of carbon thing in the middle that you might recognize from the 6007 a few years ago.
And the other world time chronograph in San Diego.
Yeah, right. James Stacey's favorite watch.
Great watch.
Any thoughts on the world time from Ben or from Danny?
Strap first.
Oh.
Yeah. Can they talk about the denim strap?
That really is the
Canadian Canadian strap.
Forget everything I just said to tee up the world time.
Let's talk about the denim strap.
It's a denim strap.
I'm sure we're getting some comments about them too. They're in two watches. They're in the world time that I just took all this time to explain that we're probably not even going to talk about.
Yep.
As well as in a new
5980G. Yeah,
right?
5980G.
What are those things like in person, Ben?
The strap?
Yes.
So the straps are calf. They're leather, but they're
denim effect.
Denim effect, exactly.
What's that mean, though?
Like an embossing, basically. Yeah. Malika rightly pointed out that a lot of homage due to a lot of credit due to our friend Travis Scott
and Cactus Jack and that Slack chat that we all had about a denim strap.
That's right.
That I was in defense of. It wasn't quite denim, but it's that same kind of trick, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Cactus Jack strap is denim, just like not a blue denim.
Yeah, right.
It's really neat. It is so weird to see on a Patek. In particular, like the Nautilus is kind of like a, you know, it's a hypey watch. So like I kind of get it. Like it's a younger watch. But this World Time is like, World Time is like one of the most quintessentially Patek elegant, you know, kind of highly regarded complications. So to see it there is pretty weird.
Is this the sort of attempt at being a little bit kooky?
But they've been doing, I mean, they've been trying that for years in so many different ways. But the answer is yes. This is a continued attempt to be kooky by Patek.
I kind of like it.
Me too.
Yeah. Look, you can also change the strap real easy.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, you don't like it, just swap it out, you know? But the world time is really neat. But again, it just was like a lot of new versions of existing 5164, which is an awesome Aquanaut.
James Stacey loves that.
He does. You know, it wasn't a super revelatory year. I will say a highlight, and I think one we'll get a lot of comments on, is the new ellipse on the bracelet.
Yeah.
Bracelet looks like an old style mesh bracelet, but I think there's how many patents on that, James? 14 patents on a bracelet.
So this morning when I was writing up the intro, I was really struggling to get the information for about the bracelet into like one paragraph. I sort of gave up, and it's technical.
Yeah.
And it's sort of half of it is like CNC machinery. The other half is like hand finished. It's complicated.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, I think a lot of people that haven't experienced Patek maybe the way that I have over the years, just kind of like, okay, like the high end brand, we know that, but you don't really understand how hard they go sometimes. They can go really hard. And on this bracelet, I think they did.
Well, yeah, sure. I was just explaining to Tony that I've been trying to write this Patek bracelet article for about 12 months. And it's hard because there are so many different like manufacturers and types of bracelet and types of gold. And it's kind of crazy.
I'm glad that we're seeing innovation, I guess, if you want to call it that, in the bracelet marketplace. I think... I don't know
Sorry,
if it's an.
That was quite funny.
Was it?
Yeah. Sorry.
You're funnier
so
than you think.
Unintentionally funny, yeah. Which is concerning because that means you're more
innovation
at me and not
in the
with
bracelet
me.
Marketplace.
Oh, sorry.
God. I think too often bracelets are, if not an afterthought, we focus on the. We do this. We're as guilty as this as anyone when we write about a watch. We talk about the watch and not the rest of it that's on a bracelet.
Well, I talk
speak
about
for
the
yourself,
bracelet.
Tom. Yeah, speak yeah. for yourself.
I will say that.
Oh, I think people like you have change this.
That's part of the appeal of Cartier, and I think a lot of the reason why like you guys sometimes are so drawn to it without even realizing, like, those are sick bracelets,
especially last year.
Yeah. Like Normal bracelet.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a sick bracelet.
It is a sick yeah. bracelet.
And yes, I agree, like Patek doing this ellipse on a bracelet, that's sort of like a nod to this design led kind of direction, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, really nice.
Yeah.
But again, a quiet year.
Yeah, for sure.
From Patek, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think last year was such a big year for the watch industry, and we're still coming out of all of that. I think if that's the general theme of the show, I'm not too concerned with that. I think it's good to see a continued cooling down in the space. Anything else you want to say before we move on, Ben, from Patek? Well, guys, we went to 3, 4, maybe 5 appointments, depending on who we were today. Rolex, Tudor, and Patek, as we talked about, kind of some of the headliners from the show. But we've still got a week of appointments lined up. I'm sure we're going to talk about a few of them tomorrow. Brands like Cartier, TAG Heuer, Grand Seiko.
Grand Seiko had some good ones.
They're really good on the site.
To be clear, all those stories are on the site. We just didn't see them in person today.
This is all part of them. This is all part of the 50-ish articles that we wrote.
Yes.
Guys, I want to go around real quick before we end out the show. What you are most excited to see that we may have written up on the site that we haven't gotten to see yet. Danny, start it off.
All right, I'm going to do 2. One is the TAG Heuer Monaco, which I have had a chance to see already.
Split second.
Rautrepont, which is a play off of the only watch in 2 colors, red and black, and a blue with a blue gradient. We talked about halo pieces earlier. That's what this is for Tag Heuer.
$130,000 Vacher, kind of RME type of thing.
Like a Richard Mille, but that's a Tag Heuer.
It's Richard Mille, the Tag Heuer way. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that. Also excited to see that funky Zenith Diver, you know, the orange one. Well, the Zenith Defy Revival.
You looked directly at
the
Malika
dive watch.
When you said that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Is that when you're most excited to see that too, Malika?
No comment. No comment.
But for real, I think that watch looks. It was the way that this thing works. You know, we get information about watches in advance. This one came in very close to Watches and Wonders timing and wasn't
What's
expecting
the case size?
A Zenith Diver 37 millimeters.
Oh.
They wear surprisingly well.
Yeah.
Okay,
honestly.
That sort of changes it. I didn't know it was that small.
And I did not realize that in 1969, which is the year the Zenith El Primero came out, that the Zenith Defy was also released and the Defy Diver, which was a 600-meter dive watch, which is like very impressive. So the same year you're doing an automatic chronograph, you're doing that, and this is like a basically a one-to-one reissue. They even like replicate the 70s bracelet.
I got a bit of an
speaking of bracelets.
It's that reissue thing that sort of winds me up. But
yeah, you did say before it is not the 70s right now.
It's not the 70s. It's 2024.
That's true. That's
just
a fact.
Letting the people at home know. anyway, yes. Sorry.
Most excited to see tomorrow or throughout the week?
Probably Cartier. I guess a bunch of stuff. Your watch that you're most excited about at Cartier.
What am I most excited about? Yeah, just
I gather.
Right, what
take
are you
the mic
about?
And tell me. Yeah,
yeah, tell him. I can do it too.
Do you want to do it?
Want to do it the same time?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Tortue.
Ah, sure.
Why do you like that?
The monopusher is not my thing, actually.
What?
Oh, come on, Tony. Stop.
No, it was one of the first, before Cartier was like the thing, that was one of the first like watches to have its moment, right? It was so odd. It like really popped in value in 2018, 2019. It all kind of runs together. I get the sort of lineage and the connection to the independent watchmakers and THA and all these types of things. I love the shape. As mentioned, I have a Tortue I've been wearing around a little bit. But the monopusher case is a little bit big for me, but that's just me. But I am excited to see the time only ones, but that makes me extremely boring. Ben, what are you excited about?
Oh man. All the Cartier stuff for sure.
Oh, actually, I didn't even tell you what I was excited about.
Back to you, Malika.
Yeah, let's interrupt Ben to hear.
You did just say Cartier and then...
I just said Cartier. I think the there are these weird gem set animals that I'm kind of excited about.
That's always the most fun stuff.
Like, and to be clear, only Cartier could make gem set animals that I would be excited about. I think if that came from any other brand, I'd be like... but those are looking pretty cool. And then they've got this new bangle... Not quite the Benoit bangle, but sort of a little bit in that vein. Excited about that.
Nice. I'm also excited about the Santos Dumont rewind.
Yeah, the reverse time.
Oh, yes.
Time, yeah.
Yes,
that's cool.
More Cartier talk tomorrow. I think we've got our appointment tomorrow afternoon. So come back for the full scoop on all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Ben, you were saying?
I'll go to the other end of the spectrum, like the anti-Cartier, which to me is probably Grand Seiko. Mm-hmm. So they have a new watch called the SBG Mark. What is it?
What is it?
SGLW. Okay, that's all I need. SGLW 002. Okay. So Grand Seiko has this new watch called the S. Sorry. SL. SLGW. Please, sorry.
The SBG. What's it called, Mark?
SLGW. 002. So if I get that wrong, somebody just correct me on camera. SLGW 002. So Grand Seiko has this watch called the SGLW.
SLGW.
SLGW 002, which is a high beat, hand-wound, thinner movement. And so I think, you know, as a lover and retailer and kind of partner of Grand Seiko, you know, they do some incredibly beautiful things. I think the thing that has been challenging in recent years has been the hand wound stuff has been a little bit too thick, which is kind of like antithetical to what I think a hand wound watch should be. So I haven't seen them yet, but to see that they're doing these hand wound high beat movements thinner, super high end finish as well for Grand Seiko will be really neat. The other one that, of course, I have to mention is Lange. Datagraph Perpetual Tourbillon Lumen, etc., is just a big bad watch, and as like a watch guy, that gets me going. And then of course the Datagraph in white gold, which they've never done before. So excited to see those as well.
Get you a little excited?
Not like Tony excited, but excited. You know.
Well, listen. I think tomorrow we've got Tag Heuer, we've got Cartier, we've got IWC. We've got Grand Seiko, Lange. We've got all of these appointments lined up. So if any of those brands are even remotely exciting to you.
Wait, what are you excited to see, Tony?
I went on like a 3-minute diatribe about the Tortue.
That's my bad. That's my bad.
Yeah. Where were you?
Well, we told you what you were excited to see. That's my
bad.
I feel like you had your own. I didn't want to steal your thunder.
I've spent enough time talking about the Tortue that I think we kind of, that ship has sailed. And all of the brands I just mentioned, we'll be talking about those. And throughout the rest of the week, we've got dozens of other brands.
We have a lot of stuff to do.
Yep.
I mean, there's 54 brands at Watches and Wonders. There's got to be more than 200 brands that are displaying throughout Geneva. Ben and I both spent a little bit of Monday at the Beau Rivage talking to some of the smaller indies and more micro brand boutique brands. We sat down with Nevada Grenchen and Guillaume and Theo Alfrey. Some of the weird stuff that they're cooking up is really fun.
So that was a cool watch, by the way. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. I mean, which watch are we talking about in particular?
I mean, all of them, but the Ofray with Peterman Badat.
Yes.
Only watch.
Yes, the only watch. So Theo Ofray stumbles in fresh off the train from Paris, I think.
Car, but either way. Just saying.
Either way, tell a tale.
I'm just saying.
He was in a car. He was driving all the watches in his car.
Pulls the watches out of the trunk, a bunch of Space One sweatshirts, yeah. and he shows us on his wrist, he's got the only watch that he did in collaboration with Peterman Bidet. Really, really cool watch, a massive balance wheel, just really conservative aesthetic. Beautiful watch, cool to sit down and hear what him and Guillaume are cooking up. But we'll talk more about all of that stuff throughout the rest of the week, guys. For now, thank you for listening to day one of Watches and Wonders, Hodinkee Radio, straight from Lucid Motors in Geneva.
Yeah, thank you for putting up with that one, guys. That was tough.
Oh, it was all right.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's an all-timer, in my opinion.